Hello and welcome to Trails Worth Hiking, the show that brings you some of the most interesting backpacking and trekking routes in the world. I'm your host, Jeremy Pendry. In the first part of the show, we bring you the story and history of a trail. Then we tell you what it's like to hike the trail and how you can do it. On this episode, we go back to the UK. We've covered iconic hikes in the UK in the past, like the West Highland Way and Hadrian's Wall Path. But this time we travel almost 80 miles along a path through the English countryside that is relatively undiscovered. So undiscovered that it could be the least known of Britain's national trails. We travel through wildflower-covered hills and valleys, vineyards and farms, where we'll pass through vibrant market towns and medieval villages with welcoming pubs. On this episode of Trails Worth Hiking, we travel the Yorkshire Wolds Way in Yorkshire, England. Welcome to the show, everyone. Feel free to reach out to me at trailsworthhiking@gmail.com with ideas for future episodes. And to see photos of the hikes we cover on the show, follow our Instagram at trailsworthhikingpodcast. Before we get started, I wanted to remind you about our sponsor, Outdoor Herbivore. Outdoor Herbivore makes high quality and delicious vegetarian and vegan backpacking meals. But as I always say, you don't need to be a vegetarian or a vegan to enjoy these meals. They taste great. They have tons of calories for a hungry hiker. They're made with quality ingredients, and they are packaged in convenient boil-in-a-bag containers so that you can cook them easily on the trail. Trails Worth Hiking listeners get 10% off their order at Outdoor Herbivore using the discount code TWH10P, Trails Worth Hiking 10%. So that's TWH10P, 10% off your order on Outdoor Herbivore backpacking meals and other products. In addition to their own great backpacking meals, Outdoor Herbivore also carries bulk ingredients. So if you're the kind of person that likes to make your own combination of ingredients for meals, you can buy things like dried bean flakes and freeze-dried rice and other things that go great in a backpacking meal. Outdoor Herbivore ships worldwide, so even if you live outside the United States, give Outdoor Herbivore a try. That's Outdoor Herbivore at outdoorherbivore.com. Thanks again to Outdoor Herbivore for sponsoring the show. All right, let's jump into the episode. Our guest on the show is listener Mimi Cortez. Mimi previously was featured on a Walking the Walk segment, and we'll talk about that a little bit in the conversation with Mimi before we talk about the Yorkshire Wolds Way. I was excited to hear from Mimi about this trail because it's actually surprising to me that there are still trails that hardly anybody hikes from end to end, and the Yorkshire Wolds Way is one of those. As Mimi will describe, most of the people she saw on the trail were day hikers, and they were mostly locals. So it's great to find a national trail across the English countryside in an area rich in history with interesting towns that is relatively undiscovered. So I hope you'll consider the Yorkshire Wolds Way after you hear this episode. The Yorkshire Wolds are hills in northeastern England. They're the northernmost chalk hills of the United Kingdom and part of the northernmost chalk stream of Europe. And chalk, as you might imagine, is a sort of white, crumbly rock. It's a pure marine limestone formed during the Cretaceous period, which is about 145 to 66 million years ago. Between the hills, there are many dry dales. Dales are what the English in this area call their valleys, and these were formed during the last ice age. The formation of the Yorkshire Wolds is in an arc running from the Humber estuary north and then east. It reaches the coast at Filey, and at the coast is where you can see the white chalk hills dropping into the North Sea. Because the valleys cut into these rolling hills, they're actually hard to see, and if you're looking across the landscape, it gives the impression of a much flatter landscape than it actually is, because the valleys sort of pop out of nowhere when you approach them. So it's an interesting, fairly unique landscape. The area has been inhabited since the Neolithic period, which goes back to about 10,000 BC, and the Bronze Age, which is a period that goes back to 3300 BC. and the Roman period, so there are a lot of archaeological sites in the area. Originally, the area was a lot of isolated farms rather than large settlements, and it's pretty much similar to that today. Wheat, rapeseed, and lavender are grown in the area. The southern end of the trail starts at the Humber Estuary, and this is a big tidal estuary of two rivers, the Ouse River and the Trent. The estuary is named for Humber the Hun, who is possibly a historical figure, nobody's quite sure, from the 12th century BC, who invaded Britain and then apparently drowned in the process. So if he was a real person, his invasion was not a success for him personally. The trail starts at the Humber Bridge. If you haven't seen the Humber Bridge, look it up online. It's a pretty long bridge. It's 2.2 kilometers, so almost 1.4 miles across. It's a single-span road suspension bridge. The center span is 1,410 meters, so 4,630 feet. When the bridge opened in 1981, it was the longest single-span suspension bridge in the world. That's a title it held until 1998. Barton-upon-Humber is on the south bank, and Hessel is on the north bank. It's a toll bridge, and it has a foot and cycle path. Even though today it's only the 12th longest of this type of bridge, it is still the longest with a foot and cycle path that crosses it. Before the bridge opened in 1981, you had to take a ferry to cross the Humber Estuary. The Yorkshire Wolds Trail is one of the UK's national trails, and as I said, it may be the least traveled. It opened in 1982. It was the 10th national trail at the time, launched by the Countryside Commission. And today there are a total of 15 British national trails. The Yorkshire Wolds Trail was originally an initiative of the Ramblers Association, which is Britain's walking charity that's been in existence since 1935. It's an organization that seeks to make sure everyone can enjoy nature on foot. It's also the first of the national trails in Britain to be style-free. I had to look up what a stile was, but apparently they are these step stool kind of arrangements to help you get over fences, typically fences that keep sheep or other livestock in a particular region. And when the trails go through these areas, they have these steps that allow you to get up and over the fence and back down. The Yorkshire Wolds apparently was the first of the British national trails to be built without having to use stiles. One interesting thing about the Yorkshire Wolds trail that Mimi mentioned that I'll mention here as well, is that there is a sort of art project that follows the trail. It's called Wander, and it was installed from 2009 to 2011. There's lots of different types of art. There's a spiraling earthwork. There's a bus shelter. There are the carved acorn posts with the acorn that represents the British National Trails. There's a modern interpretation of a Bronze Age archaeological site. And there are 6 benches that have poetry written on them so that you can sit and contemplate the author's meaning. And there's the end marker at the end of the trail, which is a stone carved with names of places along the trail. So I think that's pretty cool that they installed an art project that you can follow throughout your hike and see different interesting works of art as you hike the trail. Another interesting thing about the Yorkshire Wolds Trail is at the north terminus, it connects to the Cleveland Way, which is a 109-mile or 175-kilometer trail through the moorlands of northern England, including North York Moors National Park. So this allows you to keep going north along the coast and then inland if you want. During the conversation with Mimi, as you'll hear, she mentioned someone named Dick Turpin, who I had not heard of, but is a famous outlaw from the area, and I had to look him up. In the early 1730s, he was a notorious horse thief, poacher, burglar, and even a killer. He was most known for highway robbery. In fact, he has been called England's most notorious highwayman. His gang was arrested in 1735, but Turpin disappeared. Then he resurfaced in 1737 with 2 new accomplices. He apparently accidentally shot and killed one of his accomplices, and then also killed a man who tried to capture him when he was discovered hiding in a forest. He then disappeared again and moved to Yorkshire using the alias John Palmer. He was eventually captured as a suspected horse thief. As Mimi tells us in the interview, one of his favorite haunts, the Green Dragon Inn in Welton, still exists along the Yorkshire Wolds Way. Turpin was imprisoned in York Castle, though at the time the authorities still didn't know his true identity. They discovered who he was, though, through a letter he wrote to his brother-in-law from his prison cell. The letter fell into the hands of authorities after his brother-in-law refused to accept it and pay the postage. And the reasons he refused to accept it aren't clear. It's not clear if he didn't want to be associated with Dick Turpin or he just didn't know who was sending the letter. But nonetheless, the letter fell into the hands of authorities and they figured out that the John Palmer they had captured was actually Dick Turpin. In 1739, he was found guilty of 2 counts of horse theft and he was sentenced to be executed. He was hung on April 7th, 1739. After his death, he has become a legend. There was popular theater in the 18th and 19th centuries that featured him. There were novels that made him out to be a kind of Robin Hood figure, which, based on what we know, doesn't seem to have been the case. And there has even been film and television in the 20th century about him. And in fact, there's even an upcoming planned series for Apple TV about Dick Turpin. So he's an interesting character. And I hope that this background has whet your appetite for the Yorkshire Wolds Way and my conversation with Mimi Cortez. Mimi Cortez, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So you are a listener of the show, and one of the things that I'm most excited about is that you are one of the listeners who actually listened to an episode of the show and then went and took a trip. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Not only did you take a trip, but you actually took an international trip after hearing an episode on the show, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And can you tell me just briefly about that?
You know, when I listened to your episode regarding Manaslu and Soon Valley, the soon as the episode ended, I knew that I had to go there. And I think within a week or two, I booked my flight to go.
So a week or two after hearing the episode, you booked a flight all the way to Nepal.
Correct.
That's amazing. I'm impressed. And just how did that work out for you? Was it a great trip? Was it fun? What did you think?
Yes. Well, you know, I do have a big Nepali community up in the Bay Area that I'm very close to. And I didn't tell them I was going to do this trip. So when I told them, they were like, you're going without us and you're not telling them. But I actually use the agency that you use when you did mm-hmm. your trip. I believe it was Airbound Expeditions. Mm-hmm. And they were incredible. They were really helpful. They helped me plan everything. I'm a solo hiker and backpacker. So it was a little bit of a challenge to kind of just go by myself and my guide and my porter. But they were able to accommodate me with that. And that was really nice. I really enjoyed it. It was beautiful.
Well, that's fantastic. I get so much joy out of hearing that other people actually listen to an episode and then actually go do something that they weren't thinking of doing before they hear the episode. And that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me doing this show. So thank you for doing that. How did you get into backpacking and trekking in the first place?
Just recently, during the pandemic on 2020, I'm a runner and all of the races that I had planned for 2020 got canceled. And, you know, when people start going outside and some of my running friends send a message saying there is a company called the Conqueror Virtual Challenges. They have this running challenge for the Appalachian Trail. And we all sign up. It was really cool because every time somebody run a certain amount of miles, you would log them in online. Then you would get, you know, the mileage. And every time you hit a different milestone on the trail, you would get a virtual postcard. And I just promised myself that by the end of the trail, I was going to go to 100 miles at the actual Appalachian Trail. And I did. And that's kind of how I got started. I got hooked.
That's amazing that there's actually a virtual Appalachian Trail. I don't even know what to call it, like that there's a program that actually does that. That's really cool. I've never heard of that. And I think it's even cooler that it inspired you to actually go hike the trail. Which section of the Appalachian Trail did you hike?
I did Virginia because by the time we were done with the virtual trail, it was already the beginning of October. So by the time I finished on Shenandoah, which was the last show that you had about Shenandoah National Park, was really excited. It was really cold. So I did four sections throughout Virginia. So I did my first section. I would get off the trail. I would do other trails and see things around, and I would do the next section and so on.
So after you hiked a section of the Appalachian Trail, how did it come about that you decided to go hike a trail in England?
Well, as soon as I start researching more hiking trails, I came across your podcast. And I initially got hooked on it because I really enjoy the portion of the history of how a trail becomes a trail. And I think that's really, really cool thing, because once you go to a trail, you don't really know how it started or how it's built, or, I mean, who decides these trails are going to exist in the first place. So when I went to Nepal, thanks to you, and I came back, I just started doing a couple other things. And last December at my sister-in-law's house, she told me about this trip that she's planning with her friend Sue Anderson. Hello, Sue from England. She's wonderful. So she was planning a trip with her. They were going to go to the Yorkshire Dales to do some hiking. And I thought about it for a second, and I just said, can I come along? I just invited myself because it sounded really beautiful and excited. And after I started looking into the trail, I just knew that I had to go.
That's great. And I think it's great that you were willing to invite yourself on a trip, because if you really want to go do this and you're a solo hiker generally, you have to find ways to make it happen. And it's not going to happen if you wait for other people. So when opportunities come up, or even if they don't, you have to make your own opportunities. So I think that's great that you did that. And so it was how many of you? Was it three of you total, or were there more?
It was three of us, my sister-in-law, Leila, Sue Anderson from the UK, and myself. It was their first time for them doing an actual multiple day bike backpacking, and they did incredible. Some of them dropped off a couple of days before.
Oh, really?
But yes, I was able to finish the trail.
So how did you then go about planning the trip? Had they already planned it and already worked it out with a company who was going to help you organize things, and you just kind of jumped in, or did you have to go plan it yourself?
Initially, we did look into a company, but it was starting to become a little bit expensive. I mean, England is not a cheap country to travel to. There is a lot of resources at the National Trail UK. So that's kind of where we decided to do the 6-day based on the trail website. Also, we watch a lot of YouTube videos, and Sue Anderson actually lives in England. So they were a little familiar with the area, but they actually never been on the trail. So that's kind of how we start preparing for it, by just doing research online and seeing what's available. Also, there is a book called The Yorkshire Walls Way that we end up purchasing, and that book is really detailed.
Okay. And so you guys actually then planned it entirely yourself. And did you make your own accommodation reservations in advance?
Yes. Leila is very organized. So she immediately created a spreadsheet with the dates and which portions of the trail we were going to be doing. And then we start booking the accommodations right away, because based on what we research, some of the towns are really small, and some of them might have Airbnbs or maybe one small inn. So we booked accommodations fairly early on.
Okay. And so when did you hike this trail? What time of year? And was that a good time of year compared to other times of year to do it?
We went in May. Keep in mind that it was my first time in the countryside in the UK. I've been to England once before, but for a short period of time, I didn't get a chance to explore. This time was mid-May when we started the trail. And I have to say that it was a great time, because I got to see the flowers blooming. It was so green. I never seen so many shades of green on the trail in my life. It was beautiful.
How long of a trail is this?
So this is a 70-mile trail. It goes through the untamed countryside of the UK. And we did it in 6 days.
Okay. And 6 days, is that the amount of time that the website suggests from the UK trail website?
Yes, that's the amount of days that the website suggested. And we thought that that could be a good opportunity for us. The way the website described this trail is has like an easy walk among the York Dells of the UK. And it is an easy trail for the most part, but there are some sharp inclines in some of the sections. You know, for Sue was a little bit hard, especially because we started carrying our own backpacks. We weren't camping on the trail because we had accommodations at some of the villages along the way. But you can camp along the trail. We decided not to, because for them it was going to be the first multiple day trip. And for me, I'd done it before, which gave me the ability to carry more things in my backpack since I wasn't carrying a tent or a stove. You know, I carry makeup instead and extra clothes.
essential backpacking gear like makeup.
Yes, essential.
Okay. And so you also, though, you were carrying a fair amount of gear, but you also incorporated some luggage transfer as part of the trip. Can you explain how that worked and why you chose to do that? It seems like for part of the time and not all of the time.
Europe has an incredible system where you can actually book companies to transfer your bags from place to place. And for me, I decided to go a week before to explore England. Once I transferred into the trail, I transferred my big bag and I only kept the stuff that I was going to carry with me on the trail. Just, you know, some sandals, my boots, just stuff that I thought I was going to need along the trail. I did carry, I think, more clothes than I needed. I was just thinking, you know, since I'm not carrying the tent and the stove, I can maybe use more nicer clothes for this trip, because I love to post pictures and take pictures, and I just didn't want to have the same clothes throughout the whole time.
You want to look good in the pictures. I understand.
Yes, exactly.
So the most important gear you had were clothes for pictures and makeup.
That's something that I don't usually carry with me on a regular backpacking trip. I think if we would have done it where we would camp along the trail.
Yeah.
The makeup wouldn't have been in.
Okay. I'll stop teasing you about that now. But it sounds like for a couple of days, though, you didn't. Did you have luggage transfer every day, or were there were a couple of days where you had to keep all of your gear, or how did that work?
Okay, so our first day, we went from Hessel to South Cove, and that was a 13-mile trail. We had no issues there. We were all happy and excited to start the trail. The second day was South Cave to Weighton, Market Weighton. And that night, once we got to the town, I just knew that Sue was already really tired.
Oh, okay.
The carry of the backpack was a lot for her. And we start asking the restaurant owner where we had dinner if they knew of a taxi service that could transfer her bags. And she actually ended up going with the bags that day and decided to see the third date. And it was fine. And we sent our bags with her. And then from there on, every time we got into town, we looked for a taxi to keep transferring our bags. And it did make a difference, because once you don't have weight, we only carry a day pack with snacks and water, of course.
So that's great. You guys actually figured this out as the trip was happening. So I didn't understand that when I saw that you had done part of the trip with luggage transfer and part without, but that's really great where you realized that it was too difficult for one of the people in your group. And then you decided, let's figure out how to do transfer from place to place. And it seems like it worked for the rest of the trip.
Yes. I think the beauty about this trail, even though it feels like you're really remote, and like you are alone within nature, the towns are fairly close.
Okay.
But you have to keep in mind that these towns are very, very small. I think some of the people that actually reside in the towns have been living there for generations, and farmers, and they take care of their land. At one of the towns that we got there, Tixendale, it was only 85 residents.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's very small.
So that's how small the towns are.
So how did you navigate from place to place along the trail? Was it pretty easy to follow the signage?
Yes. The mark for this trail is the acorn. And the acorn is really easy to find. The trail is very well defined. There was only one little section once you go through some of the fields, because you go through a lot of farming fields to a lot of canola fields, that we kind of struggled, but it was only like one time that we were like, where is the acorn? I don't see it. But I had already downloaded the old trails. We downloaded Google Maps and also the Yorkshire Wolds Way book. It was very detailed. It kind of tells you like, once you get here, turn to the left and then you're going to see this village. And so that was very helpful as well.
Great. So getting to the trailhead, how did that work? Did you fly into London?
Yes, I flew into London. Then from London, I took a train to Hull. And at Hull, we spent the night. And the next morning, we got a taxi cab to took us to the entrance of the trail. We actually started a little bit before the trail at this trail called Annie's Trail. So from there, we walk about 3/4 of a mile where we saw the Humber Bridge and actually the official marker of the beginning of the trail, which is a stone with a big acorn engraved in it. So that was kind of how we got to the trail, and then we went on.
Explain what the Humber Bridge is.
It's just huge, and it's very impressive to start the trail there. It's beautiful, and it's a very significant landmark in that part of the UK.
And are you hiking the trail from south to north?
Yes.
Okay. And is that just the way they had described it on the website? So you figure that's probably the way you should do it?
Yes, that's the way pretty much everybody that I saw on YouTube doing it. And I didn't find anybody doing it the other way around.
Okay.
One thing, if I have to mention that, all the research that we did and the people that I found doing the trail on YouTube that have recorded, it was mostly locals. I really didn't see anyone from out of the country doing this trail, which excited me more because I'm like, wow, like I don't see people from other countries doing this trail. It was really neat because I didn't see any tourists along the trail or anybody that was not from the UK.
Did you see other people doing the entire trail like you were doing?
No, we saw people doing some sections, maybe day hikers, but no one doing the trail.
That's great because it's pretty rare to find a major national trail like this where there's really nobody else doing it the way you're doing it. So you kind of have it to yourself, at least the experience of going from day to day to day.
Yes, 100%. I think the difference between the Yorkshire Wolds Way versus Manaslu and the Sun Valley was that even though Nepal was so remote, you're hiking next to other tourists, a lot of Europeans, yep. A lot of Asian people that go and do the trail. And that was not the case at the Yorkshire Wolds Way. It really felt like we were doing this on our own with nobody else around.
And it sounds like you got a chance maybe to meet some of the local people, whether on the trail or in the towns.
Yes.
So for people who've never been to this part of England, and I guess let's start with where in England is this? It's in sort of northeastern England, is that correct?
Yes, it's in northeastern England along the coast.
Okay. And what does this area look like for people who haven't seen it? You mentioned wildflowers and you mentioned that there were some hills and some inclines. So in general, what is the terrain like that you're walking through?
I believe that it also depends on what time of year you're doing this trail. The beauty of us doing it during May is, you know, the flowers are blooming and the canola fields that were incredible and the grass was green. But I know that this is an all year round trail. And if you go on winter, you might not see the beautiful flowers and the beautiful bushes with the flowers that we saw. The trail might not be as green. The key is going where, when all the plantations are at its peak with the flowers and and the plants blooming, I guess.
And were there lots of, for example, farm animals like sheep and things like that as well?
Yes, that was one of the best parts, that you go through a lot of private property and a lot of the farmers have sheep, horses, cows, and you go through fields. You have to open a gate and close it behind you. And at least, you know, you're like hiking in the middle of this field with sheep all around, cows all around, horses all around. And it's really beautiful. It really is like the perfect countryside, perfect postcard. It really does. Like, you're in the middle of it with all these beautiful sheep just looking at you like, where are you going?
Most sheep aren't that curious in my experience. So that's interesting that they were curious about you. All right. So let's talk a little bit about what this hike looks like day to day. You mentioned the first day is about 13 miles, and that is from Hessel to South Cave?
Yes, that's correct. Hessel to South Cave. And like I said, we started at the Humber Bridge, which was majestic. And that day, we actually went through different terrain because you start along the coast. And there is, you know, you go through rocks. If this section of the trail has a high tide, there is an additional trail that you can take. I think the only challenge is that we decided to go along the coast and there was no water, but there was a lot of mud. So we got a little muddy. Then that day we also went through some plantations with beautiful trees. It looks like you're just going through tunnels and tunnels of trees in some of these farms. We also stopped at the town of Welton, where we actually had lunch. And that was a really cute pub. It's called the Green Dragon. And that's where Dick Turpin actually got arrested in 1738. He was a very famous highwayman that was arrested there. So that was a cool little history fact there that we didn't know.
So Dick Turpin was some kind of outlaw who was arrested there, huh?
Yes, exactly.
And then where did you end up staying that night?
We stayed at a place called Fox and Connie Inn. It was actually really cute. The rooms were very modern. The bed was comfortable and they had a really cute restaurant and the food was great. What did I have? I had like a pie with meat inside.
That sounds very English.
Yes, with lots of peas.
Yes, that sounds perfectly English. A shepherd's pie.
Yeah,
with
the
peas.
Shepherd's pie. That's exactly what I had.
Okay. All right. So after the first day was 13 miles, which is about 21 kilometers. And then the next day you went from South Cave to Market Weighton.
Yes, that's correct.
Even though I am a native English speaker and you're not, I'm probably getting all the pronunciations wrong anyway, because the English pronunciations are hard for me as well.
Yes, Sue was trying to teach me how to say the York, because I started saying Yorkshire, Yorkshire. And she was trying to teach me how to pronounce it correctly. And I think I butcher it every time.
Well, that's great, though. You had someone who's an actual English person with you who could help you with all that.
Yes.
So that's perfect. Okay. And so what was that day like?
That day was really great. The woodland scenery was beautiful. They call it dells, but for us, we call it valleys. And like I said, the different shades of green were incredible. And it was also the first encounter with art. One of the beauties about this trail is that they have art installations throughout the trail. And at this section, we encounter the first a set of beautiful benches that have poetry written on them. And you can just sit there and admire the valleys or the dells and enjoy.
That's really neat that they have art that is part of, that's sort of part of the trail experience.
Yes. And that was actually a really big surprise. I didn't know about the art because the research that I did really didn't show much about it until we got the book. It talks about the art. It talks about the poets and the artists that do the installations along. And one of the cool things about the book.
What is it called now? Could you tell us what it's called?
It is called The Yorkshire Walls Way by Tony Gowers.
Okay.
It's very detailed and it tells you a little bit about not only the art and the trail, but also other trails that and all the hidden things that you can find at some of the villages. Like if you want to find art in some of the villages along the trail, you can do that. Mm-hmm. Some of the artists and the poets have their own trails in some of the villages, mm-hmm. and you can do a side trip just for that. I didn't do any of it, but I think I would love to go back and do some of the side little, cute little finds that are along the trail.
That's one of the hard things always with trips like this is there's so many things you could go see, but when you're trying to get from one point to another point, it always feels like it's going to be a lot of extra work after you've had a long, hard day or in the middle of a hard day to do some kind of side trip. So I've had that experience many times where I think, oh, I'll come back and I'll do that. I'll go hike that hill next time.
Right.
Day two was 12 miles and about 19 kilometers. And day three looks like that's a bit of a shorter day. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, that was 8.5 miles. And we went from Market Weighton to Millington. And the town of Market Weighton was really, really charming. That's where actually we had my first fish and chips. Ah. And they were delicious. The owner of the restaurant was the one who pointed us to the taxi person who transferred our bags that the next day or for day three. And everybody was just so nice. At this section of the trail, that's where you actually hike next to the canola oil plantations. And the canola oil plantations, you see them from far away once, or I was on the train, I got to see them afar, and I'm like, wow, it's like another super bloom here, because at that time we had the super bloom here in California with all the wildflowers. And I'm like, wow, the UK also has a super bloom.
So canola oil, if I remember correctly, comes from a plant called, is it rapeseed or rapeseed or something like that? I don't know what it's called.
I believe it's rapeseed, but it's a flower. It's just a plant with a tall yellow flower. And it's just beautiful because it goes for miles and miles. And on these sections, you actually get to hike right next to them, which was just so beautiful. You really feel like you are on a dream because of the flowers and the countryside. It was just beautiful. It's a different beauty than I have ever experienced in the trails that I have done. But I'm not an expert hiker, and I haven't done really much hiking to compare. But it was just so beautiful.
And it sounds like from some of the notes that you shared with me that you saw some neat man-made things along this part of the trail as well, a particular church and then also a Buddhist center. Could you talk about maybe not just about these ones, but also just in general about the sort of historical buildings and things that you were seeing as you were hiking?
Aside from being beautiful, there is a lot of history on this trail. Some of the towns have been around for many, many years. And some of the towns actually still have some beacons where back in the day, you know, people used to lie to let other villages know of harm or war or something.
Really?
Yeah. So there are some beacons along the trail. There is a lot of churches. On this section, on this particular section, we went through St. James Noble Home, if I'm saying that right. And this church was really pretty because it has medieval glass, really old doors. I think this church dates back from the 12th century. So that's really, really neat things to see. And some of the churches are actually open that you can actually go there, and people want to share about their history. We got so lucky here because we just sat outside the church in a bench, and there comes this guy with his dog and said, "Did you guys want to go in and take a look?" And I'm like,
"Oh, nice."
Yes. And it turns out that that was the keeper of the church, and he told us all about it. There is a really old stone that was found when they were doing the renovation. They just found it, and it turned out that it was a really, really old stone. It's a really neat thing to see because, you know, we don't really have contact with that much history. Like, you can actually touch it. It's not like a museum where you have to stay a couple feet away. You can actually touch this things that are beautiful and have so much history.
And it's great that the local people want to share that with you when you're a visitor, and they want you to see their church from the 12th century and experience that.
Yes.
And what were your accommodations that night?
The accommodations for this night, we stay at a Buddhist meditation center that was really neat. It's about a couple miles away from the trail. And I think we got off the trail a little too early because we actually ended up going through a road that was very heavy traffic. Big trucks were coming by very often, and there is no side path for you to move over. So we like tried to go really fast on the road. We got off the trail a little early. So for this section, I would suggest being careful and actually follow the trail until you get to the trail that takes you to the monastery. And this monastery is beautiful. They actually pray for world peace every day. Wow. They have a small cafe, and the accommodations are really nice. Right across the street or across the road from the monastery, there is a golf course, which is a little bit of contradiction because you see the spiritual side in one where we stayed, and then, you know, the modern side with the golf course. But they have a really nice restaurant, and that's where we end up going out to dinner that night at the golf course restaurant, and it was really nice. It was really yummy.
I think that's cool that you got to stay in a Buddhist meditation center. I've actually done meditation retreats at Buddhist meditation centers in the past, and it's something that I think would be cool to be able to spend some time at a place like that in the middle of a trail.
Yes, I would have liked to stay there an extra day just so I could meditate. They welcome you to join the meditations and the chants in the morning and throughout the day. Another cool thing about this section as well is we encounter wild garlic plants.
Oh, wow.
And at the beginning, you feel like there is garlic all around you, or somebody is smashing a lot of garlic because it's very profound. The smell of garlic is something I never experienced before. Even when I'm cooking myself, I don't smell it that profound. It was insane. And it was just a plant that with a beautiful white flower. Later on, I found out that it was edible, and I actually ended up having a wild garlic soup because I really wanted to try it.
That's cool.
And I'm like, I wish I would have known that it was edible. I would have probably filled up my backpack with wild garlic flour so I could bring home.
And so the next day, day four, was from Millington to Thixendale.
Yes.
That was about 12 miles and, again, 19 kilometers. How did that day go?
That day was great. Based on what I heard from Sue, it was that this section, it was the Romans used to cross here.
Okay.
And this area dates back to the Roman times. It's really nice. And we encountered this prickly bush. Talking about plants, you get to see all these different plants that I never seen before. And what strike me is that they all smell and are beautiful colors. This particular plant is called gorse, and it smells like the Tropicana sunscreen. So I feel like I needed to bring my bathing suit for that section because it really smells like the beach, and is yellow as well, a different type of yellow. a little more bright or more neon. But it was really cool. There is some uphills on this section once you go through this part where the gorse is. And this day actually encountered some marathon runners that were training for a marathon, which was really nice. They chatted for a bit and kept going. But lots of dells, lots of flowers. This particular section, we entrance a farm called Northfield Farm. And it was beautiful because they have cherry trees all along the trail, and they were blooming with pink flowers.
Oh, perfect.
It was so beautiful. We actually ended up having lunch there and enjoying the view because it felt like we were in a fairy tale there.
I'm detecting a theme here for the trip.
Yes.
How were the accommodations that night?
The accommodations were great. We stayed at a little B&B. It's called the Cross Key. And it's managed by a couple that just recently got married. And they moved to Tixendale to run this pub and this B&B. And the couple were really nice. That particular day was a Thursday, and every Thursday, apparently, it's fish and chips day. They don't have anything else in the menu, just fish and chips and peas. And that's what we had for dinner. It was delicious. And this was the only place where I could get a really good hot sauce.
Okay.
So if you like spicy, bring your own hot sauce. Me being Mexican, I should have known better and bring my own spice. But they had really good, hot sauce. One of the locals apparently is a hot sauce aficionado, and he makes the hot sauce. He grows his own peppers, and he makes hot sauce.
So the next day is your big day. The next day is from Tixendale to Sherburn, and that was 19 miles or 30 kilometers. So that's a pretty long day.
Yes, that's a really long day. And that day, by that time, Sue already had exited the trail, and Leila decided to sit that one out, and I did it on my own, which is fine. I was just a little worried about the 19 miles. I mean, it sounds intimidating because 19 miles, it's a long day on the trail. I got up really early, and I did really good. I think I got to Sherburn around 4 p.m., but this section is really beautiful, and it was really special, not only because I was alone, not that I didn't enjoy Sue and Leila's company, of course, but there is something different about you being alone within nature. And I did a lot of thinking because when I was on the trail, I got the news that my dad passed away. So it was bit surreal to be in so much beauty with a certain amount of pain at the same time. But this section has one of the most incredible things that you're going to see on the trail, and is the Warren Percy Medieval Village. Mm. It's a lot of the buildings are still standing, especially the church that is next to a cemetery. So once you go there, it feels like you are in a different time zone, and nobody was there. Being there was really, really special. I took my time there. Of course, taking pictures and video, but also just reflecting on where I was and how lucky I was to be there. It was really, really cool. And you go through the whole medieval village, and then you go to some really old train tracks. Mm-hmm. And more flowers and more valleys. And it was just beautiful.
I'm sorry to hear that your father passed away. That must have been tough to be so far from this part of the world when that happened. But it sounds like you were in a place that, I guess of all places you could be, it's a great place to be out on the trail among nature.
Yes, thank you.
And then the last day of the trip was also a pretty big day. It was 17 miles and 28 kilometers, and that's from Sherburn to Philly or Filey?
Filey.
You know how to pronounce that?
Yeah. Sherburn to Filey.
Okay.
Yeah, this is, and I'm not sure if this happens to you, but this is the last day is always tough because, you know, it's the last day and the trail is ending and you have to go home after that. But it was great because you go from the valleys and the trees to the coast. And you start seeing all the chalks, cliffs. One of the cool things about this trail is it's also an area with a lot of chalk.
Yeah, chalk. So it's like, is it like white rock, basically?
Yes. Okay. A white rock. It's white chalk, basically, which I actually end up bringing a little piece of it. But it was great. And then once you start seeing the coast, you see the cliffs, and it's very impressive because they're beautiful and you see the ocean. And once you get to the town of Philly, you actually walk through the town and there is a little boardwalk with restaurants. And it was just amazing to see people in bathing suits in the water. And I'm pretty sure the water is cold, but there were people in the water. And then you get to the bottom of the cliff where the trail continues up to some stairs, and you feel like you can touch the acorn to mark the end of the trail, but those stairs keep going and going and going, and you're like, is this thing has an end?
Were your friends, is it Layla and Sue? Were they with you at the end?
At that time, it was just Layla and I.
Okay.
Yes, it was Layla and I, and we made it to the top of the cliff, and the views are incredible. It was just beautiful.
If somebody were to ask you why they should do this trail versus some other trail out there, why is this one that is really worth doing?
It's worth doing because it's really an unspoiled area. You're not going to find a bunch of tourists taking pictures. You're not going to find a bunch of people from other countries or big groups of hikers coming to do this trail. If you're going to find a hiker or somebody doing this trail, it's probably going to be a local or somebody from the UK. The towns are full of history. And if you like architecture and churches and history and medieval times, this is the trail for you to do. I think it literally brings all your senses to life, like your vision, your smell, your ears, because there is a lot of, sheep and birds all over. It's incredible. It's a trail worth hiking for sure.
Do you have a particular moment or memory that will stick with you, do you think, maybe 20 years from now when you look back on this particular hike?
There are so many beautiful moments. From seeing the plants that I never seen before and smelling how wonderful they smell, I have to say that also when Sue taught me how to make a proper cup of tea was one of the highlights as well.
Ah, okay. So you learned a very traditional English type of activity.
Yes. Yeah, so thank you, Sue, for that.
Great. And what about if you were to do this hike again and give advice to somebody else doing the hike? Is there something that you would do differently if you did it again?
If I decide to do this trail again, or if somebody is considering doing the trail, I highly recommend staying into the villages. Because even though you can camp along the trail, you go through private property. And even though the locals are very familiar with the trail and they're okay with hikers, they're very friendly, you have to ask permission to spend an eye on the trail. And I think getting accommodations into the town, it also gives you the opportunity to explore and really learn about the towns along the way. I would definitely would love to go there because the Yorkshire Wolds Way is actually connects a bigger trail. I didn't know that the UK has a bunch of different trails that you can do.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of this one, you could keep going and connect to a different trail.
Yes, correct.
What is the trail that goes from the end of this one? Do you know?
Oh, it's called the Cleveland Way.
Oh, okay. So I'll have to look at that. Yeah, that's interesting. That's definitely something I've seen with looking at the UK and the trail system there. There's so many national trails in the UK that it seems like you could, without too much trouble, do several if you had more time.
Yes. The Southwest Coast Path, I think that's really goes along the coast. And I think it's probably like the Appalachian Trail, like 2,000 miles or something like that.
I don't think it's quite that long, but it is very long. I think it's maybe 650 miles or something like that. The reason I know that is that one is on my list because my last name, Pendry, is from that region.
Okay.
So I would like to hike that trail someday to see where my name comes from. But so it's on my list.
Wonderful.
All right. Well, Mimi Cortez, thank you so much for telling me about your hike on the Yorkshire Wolds Way. But while I have you, I have a few more questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. What is one piece of gear you don't leave home without?
My GoPro.
So that's interesting because a lot of people use GoPros for different things, but most hikers on long distance trails don't tell me they use a GoPro. So how does that work for you? And what do you do with all the recordings of all these hikes?
When you're a solo hiker and want to preserve the memories, for me, pictures are valuable memories. I know you had an episode with a professional photographer that takes incredible images, but that type of gear is really heavy for a trail, as you know. And even though we have our phones, if you're doing a long trail, you don't want to utilize your phone as much just to preserve battery and make sure you have enough battery for the life of the trail. So the GoPro is small and it's light enough that you can carry for pictures and videos and just create the memories that I can go back to and remember those wonderful times because I have the worst memory.
It sounds like you use it actually you're using it for pictures too, not just video.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Pictures and videos. And you know, of course, every once in a while, I do make a video and I post it on my social media. I'm not very good at it, but I try.
Okay, cool. What's one other trip that you've done besides this one that you think others shouldn't miss out on?
I haven't done many, but I would say the Paria Canyon. It's another trail that I done from beginning to end. And that's a trail that goes from Utah to Arizona. And it goes through, I believe the Paria Canyon is the tallest canyon in the States.
Okay.
And that's a 3-day hike. And you're inside the canyon. So if you're claustrophobic, I don't recommend it. But it's definitely a really cool area to see.
Where is it located?
It's in Utah. It goes from Utah to Arizona. You start the trail near Kanab.
Okay. It's a slot canyon, it sounds like. One of those very narrow canyons. Okay.
Yes. There are times where you have to push your backpack through the canyon and you have to go sideways to make sure you go through the canyon. But it's beautiful. It's at night, you know. They only give out certain amount of permits. I was lucky, and I don't even know why I got the permit. I just applied for it, and when I realized I got it, I felt like, okay, now I have to go. And it was really pretty.
Cool. That sounds interesting. I haven't done a slot canyon hike before, and it's something that's on my list of things I want to do. So I know there are several good ones for beginners, but I'll have to look into one of those. Okay, last question. What's the next trip on your list?
My next trip, I'm going to be going to Havasupai this next week.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yes, I'll be going to Havasupai alone, and I'm really excited because I've been wanting to see these waterfalls for the longest time. It's going to be hot because it's in the middle of September, but I'm just going to be inside the water, I guess, the whole time.
Well, I was just going to say that. I'm thinking early September, it's still going to be very, very hot out in that corner of the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
But you've got it. You've already got the permits and you're going to go. And I would assume that there will be a number of people on the trail. It's not, you won't be far from anyone else, even if you're alone.
Yeah, with Havasupai, the Havasupai village is one of the most remote villages for an Indian reservation here in the United States. And right after COVID, their rules and their entering system into the village has changed. Now, if you want to, they're not issuing any more permits. If you want to get a permit, you have to look into at any cancellations that are on the website. And I saw one for right after the Labor Day weekend. And I'm like, I have to take it, which I did. And wish me luck.
Yes, good luck. I'm curious to hear how that goes for you. All right. Mimi Cortez, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun talking to you.
So I hope we've inspired you to hike the Yorkshire Wolds Way. And if you enjoyed this episode, tell a friend about it. Or better yet, give us a good review on whichever podcast service you use. And keep in mind that this podcast is entertainment and meant to spark your interest. If you decide to hike the trail, do your own research. Like anything else worth doing, outdoor adventure has risk. So when you go, pack your common sense. And when you get back, tell me how it went. Next time on Trails Worth Hiking, we go on a pilgrimage. I probably don't need to say any more, and you know the trail I'm talking about. Yes, that pilgrimage. We'll start our pilgrimage in the French Pyrenees and hike hundreds of miles across northern Spain to Santiago de Compostela in Galicia, where the remains of St. James, one of the 12 apostles of Jesus, may lie. And we'll even take a bonus walk through Portugal to the same destination, because as we'll see, there are many caminos leading to this destination. Next time on Trails Worth Hiking, we travel the Camino de Santiago in northern Spain. If you have any questions or feedback on this episode, or ideas for future episodes, including if you want to be a guest and talk about a trail that you've hiked, reach out to me at trailsworthhiking@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at trailsworthhikingpodcast. So start planning your next hike, and before you know it, you'll be on the trail. Thanks for listening. What if we did a couple of questions in Spanish and you could make fun of my accent?
Oh, me parece muy bien.
Okay, bueno. Okay. ¿Cuál es tu próximo viaje?
Mi próximo viaje va a ser a Havasupai en Arizona.
Bueno, bueno. ¿Y por qué? ¿Por qué va a ser el sendero en Havasupai?
Porque es un lugar muy remoto y tiene unas cascadas las más hermosas del mundo, yo pienso.
Bueno.
You did great. Wow. You're a good Spanish speaker. Why you didn't interview me the whole time in Spanish?
Sí, sí, podemos hacerlo en español si quieres.
Muy bien, muy bien.
Okay, I'll stop there before I say a lot of terrible Spanish. But thank you very much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Muchas gracias a ti. Gracias por invitarme a estar en tu show.